Okay, so Dominique texted me yesterday. Day before yesterday, And he said, I'm in a bit of a quandary here. I was supposed to lead singing last week, and I called Chris and asked if he could switch with me because I couldn't be here. And then I realized I'm supposed to lead singing and preach today. And so I said, well, do you want to do both? He said, not really. So gave him a choice of which one he wanted to do. He said he would rather lead singing. And so I'm going to share a few thoughts with you, and then Dominique is going to offer the invitation at the end. Great job leading singing, by the way. And great songs that you always choose. I love. You're the only one that ever leads all of God's singers. He leads every. I love that song. How did I sing it? Oh. Wow. It's time for everything, right? I even complimented Jeff in Sunday school this morning. That was just a day of compliments, I guess. Wow. One of the things that I like to do when I'm reading through scripture, I tend to be a pretty critical person. Some of you find yourselves being too overly critical of other people. Sometimes, I mean, you guys know it. I'm a very sarcastic person, and I do find myself being overcritical. And one of the areas of criticism that I always is I read scripture, and I read stories about people, and then I'm overly critical of them. And so what I've tried to do is I try to place myself in the story. And I try to ask myself this question: what would I have done? What would I have done differently if I were in this position? And obviously, it's a question that, I mean, you know, if I'm really honest with myself, you know, oftentimes I would make the same mistake. I would hope that maybe I would do a little better, but I'm not sure that I would. I was at school this week. The last couple weeks, we've been in my Bible class studying about something about faith. What is faith? And we talked about, you know, faith is a knowledge of the unseen, and connecting the two together with something that is 100% confidence and something that is 100% unseen and we can't totally be sure of from the physical perspective. And this week we have been looking at some stories of faith and some stories of some not so great faith. And so I want to just share a few thoughts with you from some of the stories. And we're going to look in the book of Matthew. And I'm going to try my best not to take up too much time because I know Dominique has a few things that he wants to say too at the end. But I just want to share some things with you. And I want you as we go through this, and maybe it's a good technique for you to maybe you do this too, but to put yourself in the story, put yourself in the place of some of the people in the story and say, if I were in that spot, well, how would I have reacted? And it helps us to understand maybe where these people were coming from, where they were in their life, and some lessons that I can learn if I place myself in their place, or try to anyway. It's always a good thing to be empathetic, right? To put yourself in other people's shoes, and that's kind of what I want you to do this morning. So we're going to begin in Matthew chapter 8. And we're going to stay in Matthew. We're going to go, we're going to look at some stories from Matthew 8 and 9, and then we're going to look at a few stories a little bit later. Again, I'm going to summarize a lot of this because these are fairly familiar stories. But then I lost my place. So beginning in Matthew chapter 8, it says, when Jesus came down from the mountain, he heard large crowds followed him. And we understand that right before this, Matthew 5, 6, and 7 is a very important passage, right? It's the Sermon on the Mount. And all these people had gathered together to find out who this Jesus was. And that was really the question that they were asking themselves. Who is this guy? Is he the Messiah? Is he not the Messiah? What is it about him that draws people to him? But so this crowd has gathered. And it's a very large crowd. And Jesus, he just lays it on the line, right? Matthew 5, 6, and 7, they are some very difficult and hard teachings. He challenges their thinking. He challenges their way of life. He challenges their religious beliefs. He challenges every part about who they are. And it says, after this teaching, it says, large crowds continued to follow him. And right away, a man with a serious skin disease some versions say leprosy, came up and knelt before him and said, "Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean." And reaching out his hand, he touched him and he said, "I'm willing, be made clean." And immediately his disease was healed. And then we find out in verse 5, it says, when he entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him. And he said, "Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed in terrible agony." And Jesus said, "I will come and heal him." The centurion replied, "I'm not worthy to have you come under my roof. But only say the word and my servant will be cured. For I too am a man under authority." And he goes on down and it says in verse 10, "Hearing this, Jesus was amazed. And said to those following him, 'I assure you, I have not found anyone in Israel with so great a faith.'" And then down in verse 13, it says, "Go, and as you have believed, let it be done for you." And the servant was cured at that very moment. And then following this, it says that he healed several more people and that he stills the storm. And he drives out the demons into the pigs. And then I want us to look at chapter 9, starting in verse 18. He says, "Suddenly one of the leaders came and knelt down before him and said, 'My daughter is near death, but come and lay your hand on her and she will live.' So Jesus and his disciples got up and followed him. And just then a woman who had suffered from bleeding for 12 years approached from behind and touched the tassel on his robe. For she said to herself, 'If I can just touch his robe, I'll be made well. But Jesus turned and saw her and said, 'Have courage, daughter, your faith has made you well.' And the woman was made well from that moment. And then Jesus came to the leader's house and he saw the flute players and the crowd lamenting loudly. 'Leave,' he said, 'because the girl isn't dead, but sleeping.' And they started laughing at him. But when the crowd had been put outside, he went in and he took her by the hand and the girl got up. And the news spread throughout the whole area." And then down in verse 27, "As Jesus went on from there, two blind men followed him. 'Have mercy on us, son of David.' And when he entered the house, the blind men approached him and said, 'Do you believe I can do this?' 'Yes, Lord,' they answered. And then he touched their eyes and said, 'Let it be done for you according to their faith.' And their eyes were opened." What are some ideas, some lessons, or some things that these stories have in common? Okay, all based on faith. What else? Okay, they came seeking Jesus. Okay, very good. What else? Okay, all different types of people. All right, and maybe not the type of people that we would expect, right? You had a centurion, Roman centurion, right? You had a leader among the people. You had a woman who had been suffering from this disease. You had blind men. You had a guy with leprosy. Okay, what else? Okay, very good. They were desperate. In every case, Jesus was their last hope. They had maybe tried everything else. Jesus was the last hope. What else? There's one more thing I want to point out. Who's going to get the answer? Okay. He did what they said. He healed them of diseases that were incurable. Okay? Things that were impossible. Anybody ever been cured of leprosy before? Well, there's a passage in the Old Testament, right, of a guy that got cured by leprosy because of his faith, Naaman. But it wasn't a common thing. If you had leprosy, guess what? You're doomed. If you're blind, you're blind. Right? You didn't just go to the LASIK doctor. Right? Or you didn't go. If you're blind, you're blind. This woman had been struggling with this disease for 12 years. Don't you think she had gone to doctors? Don't you think she had gone to... These were diseases that were impossible to heal. And yet Jesus did the impossible. These people came to Jesus and asked him for the impossible. But yet, Why did he heal them? Because they believed he could. They believed he could. Things that they had no way of knowing was going to happen, happened. As we look at the ministry, especially the beginning ministry of Jesus, it was a lot about his disciples, right? He chose these 12 guys, and he said, you know, eventually you're going to take over the work, you're going to take over the ministry. Let me show you how it's done. Let me show you some things. And so all along the way, he's turning around and he's teaching them lessons, right? It says the centurion gets healed. The centurion's servant gets healed. And he turns around and he says something to his disciples. He doesn't say it to the centurion. He says it to his disciples. What does he say? I have never seen such amazing faith. I've never seen such amazing faith. Which means, if he's never seen such amazing faith, guess whose faith is not amazing? His own disciples. He turns to them. This is a Roman centurion. Why does he even have faith in me? What amazing faith. And so you wonder what the disciples were thinking. Now I want you to turn over to the next chapter, chapter 10. It says, so he called his 12 disciples together and he gave them authority over unclean spirits to drive them out and to heal every disease and sickness. And then he names the apostles. And then he gives them some instructions. But the key verse is that he does what for them? He gives them the power to do the work that he's been doing. I don't know if he waved his hand or he laid his hand on them or he just said, hey, you've got powers now to heal and to cast out demons. He said, what I've been doing, you are now capable of doing yourselves. And so they continue on down the road. And several things happen. And then we come to, I know I'm generalizing, several things happen. That's kind of general, isn't it? Then you come to chapter 14. Chapter 14. Beginning of chapter 14, John the Baptist is beheaded. Jesus is very upset about it, obviously. And so in chapter 14, starting in verse 13, it says, when Jesus heard about it, he withdrew there by a boat to a remote place to be alone. So you get this picture of you've got this shore, and you've got all these people that are following Jesus, and so he has to get away. And so he gets in a boat, and he goes somewhere else to be alone. Jesus comes back, it says, and he got onto the shore, and what did he see? Verse 14, it says he saw a huge crowd. This is a whole nother lesson. But what was his immediate response? Compassion. I mean, he'd had maybe the worst day of his life up to this point, right? He's lost his cousin in a very, very awful way. He was tired, frustrated, at his disciples probably, maybe, I mean, and then he comes ashore and his immediate response was, oh, these people need my help. And so it says that he stepped ashore, saw a huge crowd and felt compassion and he started healing. And evening came and the disciples approached him and said, this place is a wilderness and it's already late. Send the crowds away so they can go into the villages and buy food for themselves. And Jesus said, they don't need to go away. You give them something to eat. And the disciples, can you imagine the looks on their faces? What? What are you talking about? Looking at each other. Well, I don't really have much. How about you? I've got even all looking in their pockets and figuring out, well, what is it that we have? We have nothing. And Jesus says, so what do you have? We only have 5 loaves and 2 fish here. And Jesus says, bring them to me. And he commanded the crowds to sit on the grass. He took the 5 loaves, 2 fish, and he looked into heaven and he blessed them. And he broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds. And everyone ate and was filled, and they picked up 12 baskets of leftover pieces. And there were 5,000 men, women, and besides women and children. Now put yourself in the place of the disciples. Could they possibly have known what Jesus was going to do? 7,000, 8,000 people on this shore. It says, everybody sit down. Now you feed them. oh, well, we'll just take the food we have and it'll just multiply itself. I mean, we'll just pass it out and, I mean, I'll just pass my hand over it and it's just going to multiply. I mean, we look at them and we say, how could they have such little faith? But how could they possibly have known? They've seen Jesus do all these miracles, but had he ever done this before? No. And so here he is, and we put ourselves in their place, and I'm not sure we would have been any different. Thinking physically, oh man, there's not a Kroger anywhere nearby. Run down to Walmart Market. You know, there's nothing. And so then immediately Jesus, it says, test them again. And the next story we get, as it says that he says, okay, you guys this time get in the boat. And I want you to go out on the sea, and I'm going to go off by myself, and I'm going to spend some time in prayer. And so it says he does. And Jesus, as he did, he got carried away in prayer. When can we ever say that about ourselves? He got carried away in prayer. It's 3:00 in the morning, and he, oh man, I left the disciples out in the boat. Told them to go out. I didn't tell them what to do after that. And I know them. They're just going to be sitting in the boat out in the, you know, I got to tell them every step of the way. And so he goes and he looks out in the sea, and what does he see? They're like a mile away in the sea. And so Jesus says, well, I'll just walk out to him. And so he walks on the sea. So it's sort of stormy that night, and they look out, and what do they see? They see some figure walking across the sea. How could they possibly have known it was Jesus? They immediately assume it's a ghost. Okay, and then Jesus immediately says, have courage, it is I. This is verse 27, don't be afraid. Lord, if it's you, Peter answered, command me to come on the water. Notice the confidence in his voice. Jesus says, it's I, Peter. And Peter says, if it is you, let me come out there. And Jesus says, come on. And so he goes out and he steps out of the boat. And I love this, says, climbing out of the boat, Peter started walking on the water and came toward Jesus. Don't you know that Peter wishes that this was the end of the story? And Peter came into the boat, and he was a hero with the other guys because he had such awesome faith. He walked out on the sea, and oh man, everybody just looked at him. Oh, Peter, you're the greatest. Wonder how many times he tried to pay off Matthew not to write the rest of the story. Okay, in there. It would have been awesome, right? Just please just don't tell that part, okay? There's only 12 of us that know it. But it says, when he saw the strength of the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. He went from hero, okay, to something else as he starts to sink. And he, yeah, man, I'm walking on the water. Help me! You know, just imagine. And then Jesus reaches down, of course, and he doesn't let him drown. He reaches out, he picks him up. And then he says this to him, you have little faith, why did you doubt? Now, here's the next, this is the story that I want to get to. That's all intro. Okay. I want you to turn to, if I can find the right verse here. It's a problem using an iPad. You can't see the whole thing. Okay, chapter 17. Oh, wait, we're not there yet. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry, chapter 15. Starting in verse 32. Chapter 15, starting in verse 32. It says, now Jesus summoned his disciples and said, I've had compassion on the crowd because they've already stayed with me 3 days and nothing to eat. Talks about it before that. He was healing and teaching. I don't want to send them away hungry, otherwise they might collapse on the way. Does this sound familiar? The disciples said to him, Lord, just do what you did the last time. We saw the amazing work you did the last time. You took a little bit of food and you passed it out to the crowd. Let's just do that again. It says, the disciples said, where could we get enough bread to feed all these people? Were these guys dense or what? He'd proven himself already, done the exact same miracle, not too far. It wasn't like it was like 2 years ago, right? It was just a few days ago, he had done this same thing. It was like deja vu. And Jesus answers, what would your answer have been? Put yourself in Jesus' spot. Are you guys idiots or what? Don't you remember what we just did? We took food and we passed it out. No. It's just like... But his answer is this. Well, how many loaves of bread do you have? 7, they said, and a few small fish. And after commanding the crowd to sit down on the ground, he took the 7 loaves and the fish. I mean, it is like a total repeat. Did the same exact thing, except there was only 8 baskets of food or 7 baskets of food left over this time. So surely the disciples have gotten it by now. He's proven himself in this great and mighty way, and then the exact circumstance happens again, and they don't even, it's like, don't even remember it. Now go to 17, and this will be the end. It says, when they reached the crowd, a man approached and knelt down before him and said, Lord, have mercy on my son because he has seizures and suffers severely. It's probably like epilepsy. He falls into the fire and often into the water. I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him. What did Jesus give them the power to do? Heal the sick of all types of diseases. It says, we brought him to the disciples. We didn't want to bother you. We heard your disciples had these powers, and so we just went to them. And yet, they couldn't heal him. And then Jesus replied. He finally says something to them. He says, you are an unbelieving and rebellious generation. He's speaking to his disciples. How long must I put up with you? How long must I put up with you? He says, bring him to me. And then Jesus casts the demon out. And then it says that they come to Jesus privately and said, why couldn't we drive it out? And Jesus said, because of your little faith. I assure you that if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you will tell this mountain to move from here to there and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. So what does that say about his disciples' faith? It wasn't even the size of a mustard seed. He said, all it takes is a little faith and my power to do anything. Yet you were unable to do it. So what does that say about their faith? Now the question is, would I have been any different? Would you have been any different? And here's the question that I want to ask us. Are you any different? Or am I any different? God proves himself again and again and again. Do we have enough faith to believe that God can do anything? Do we have enough faith to believe that nothing is impossible? I have a couple of ending kind of statements. The first one is this. This story, these stories, help me to realize that even the people closest to Jesus struggled with their faith. They saw the miracles, and yet they struggled. And yet God asks us to believe in these things and not ever see them. And so it gives me encouragement in the fact that even when I do struggle in my faith, there are others that have struggled. The greatest men maybe that have ever lived, okay, struggled in their faith. But I have to know that God can do the impossible. And when my faith comes together with his power, nothing can stop it. But it takes both. I can't do anything without him, and yet he won't accomplish anything that I ask without my faith. Kind of sound like a wind over there. It's okay. And so I just wanted you to think about that this morning. That was kind of on my mind, on my heart, because I had already kind of gone through this lesson this week, and I thought it might be beneficial to you. And so Dominique is going to finish up the lesson and the invitation and the invitation song, and then we'll close out.
All right. I guess I got It's like a bit of a testimony. I was trying to figure out how to incorporate it into everything you were saying, and you said it with your last two statements right at the end. But you know, we do the invitation every week, and you know, I've been here a long time, and you know, every week it's the same. I don't come up here and I don't talk about something that I've actually struggled with since I was a child. And I've always had like this I guess you can call it like a apathetic like way of thinking about things. Like it's like I didn't have like a real drive or real excitement for things in life. And you know, that's why a lot of times that's why you see me come and go, because I've never been necessarily diagnosed with it, but I used to feel depressed a lot of the times. Honestly, when I was younger, I was suicidal. I've had thoughts like that before in my past. And, you know, being here at the church, it did help me, but it didn't necessarily, I guess, get rid of that feeling. While I was away, I had a lot of time to reflect and think about what it is that was making me feel like that. I mean, you come into the church, you get baptized, you do all these things and you help all these people, and for some reason, you still feel empty inside. And the main thing that I started thinking about was I was doing the one thing that we as humans, what we're used to doing, and that is we're afraid to let go of control. You see, you know, you've heard the Carrie Underwood song, "Jesus Take the Wheel," right? Everybody knows the song. But the problem is, a lot of times we want to play, I say we because I know there's more people out there like me maybe, but we want to play backseat driver. We want to say, "Hey, Lord, I want you to take me to this place right here. This is where I want to be." But see, in order to get there, you got to take a left turn up here, or you got to take a right turn. It's right around the corner. And Jesus says, no. Because you see, you can't tell him how you're going to get there. I think that's a problem that we have. We want too much control. We want to play backseat driver. And that was my problem. I thought I had, you know, things I wanted to do, like the type of person I wanted to be, and I was trying to control that too much, and all it did was lead me to, like, disappointment. And you talk about what you just talked about having faith, about truly letting God take control. I mean, sometimes I did practice this, and I had to throw this in there, but sometimes you got to be like Elsa and just let it go, okay? And, you know, after having time to reflect about that, I do feel so much better, you know, as a person, as my walk in spirituality. I feel a whole lot better because I have learned to truly let it go. And I remember there was a lesson you gave, Dave, you gave it. This is the second compliment you're about to get from me. there's a lesson you gave about having true peace in Jesus. You talked about, you know, the true peace of in Jesus. And I didn't understand that until I had time to reflect on it and figure out what it is that you meant. And basically, Romans 8:28, we know that in all things, I'm going to butcher it, but all things works out for the greater good for those who love God. You can keep believing that. You can let go of the control. Let God, let Jesus truly take the wheel. Be patient. Let him take his time. And he will either get you to where you need to be when you are prepared for it, or he will give you something better. You think that way, and there's just absolute peace that you really can't make a person understand unless you truly, you know, get to that point. So That's kind of like my testimony, something I've been dealing with. I've been away because I was in a depressed state. I basically closed myself off from the world. But in my time of reflection, you know, praying and meditating on it, I think I'm a whole lot better because I finally have that understanding as far as like what I was doing wrong in my spiritual walk. And I don't know if there's other people out there who suffer from that, but I just wanted to share that about truly letting go and giving God the control. So now we're going to sing a song. If you feel like you need to let it, you know, need to let it go, or if you got anything troubling you, you feeling like you're struggling with anything, we offer this invitation as we stand and as we sing.
God sent